Imagine this for a moment. You don't just have to rely on your own leadership experience. You don't just have to depend on what your boss tells you or on the lessons you pick up from books and articles. Imagine if you could also tap directly into the lived knowledge of leaders who've been there before you. Their successes, their failures, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Leaders who share openly how they overcame challenges, how they grew, how they stumbled, tried again, failed again, and finally got it right. And these aren't the disconnected ivory tower bosses who long ago left reality, nor are they the countless would-be consultants who never actually carried the weight of responsibility. These are real leaders on the ground, people who've actually led and who are willing to tell you not just what worked, but also what not to do. And sometimes knowing what not to do is already half the rent, maybe even more. Just imagine what value that would bring for you. Well, that's what we're going to do from now on with our new theme inside the Mammoth in the Room. We're calling it Mammoth Encounters. You are listening to the Mammoth in the Room, a podcast dedicated to sharing science-backed leadership strategies for real-world success. Welcome back, everyone, to the Mammoth in the Room, where we explore leadership lessons that stand the test of time. I'm Nicholas Bocconi, CEO of Mammoth Leadership Sciences, and today we begin this new journey with a very special guest. For our first Mammoth Encounter, I'm joined by my friend and colleague, fellow Austrian Tony Luchner. Many of you will recognize his name because he wrote the foreword to my book, The Mammoth in the Room. Tony is a man of remarkable versatility, an international leader, business leader, general manager, a thinker at the crossroads of experience, science, and leadership philosophy. But that's only part of who he is. He's also a dedicated family man, a former professional athlete, a soccer coach, a taekwondo black belt, an alpine ski instructor, an author of many books, and even a theater actor. In this inaugural conversation, Tony and I won't focus on providing neat solutions. Instead, we'll share some of our own leadership situations, moments where, looking back, we realized there was a mammoth in the room influencing what happened. Think of this episode as a first taste of what's to come. These conversations will be occasional, but when they happen, they'll be raw, real, and revealing. And my hope is simple. By making individual leadership experiences collectively accessible, we'll give you the tools to spot, understand, and confront the mammoths in your own leadership journey. So let's dive in. Here is the first mammoth encounter with my friend and colleague, Tony Luchner. Tony, welcome to the show. We are very honored to have you. How are you doing? How are things back in good old Austria?
Austria is the cradle of Schnitzel. And we have late afternoon now here, and I'm invited for dinner by my children and my grandchildren. So I'm really looking at the moment after that podcast. I really look forward to have this schnitzel.
Okay, that's good. So that means we should hurry up. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
We should hurry up.
All right. Well, then let's dive in. Tony, since you wrote the foreword to my book, you know exactly what we mean when we talk about the mammoth. But let's ground our listeners once more. When we say the mammoth in the room, we're talking about the hidden evolutionary forces of human behavior. Fear, status, loyalty, dominance, overconfidence, greed, all these things that shape leadership decisions making far more often than we admit. You lived this across so many different roles. Can you share a moment where you really felt one of these mammoths lurking?
Probably a situation which I walked through two times in my business life, where all the mammoths were there all of a sudden. When I became when I went from a peer to a leader, this is a very special situation because when I was announced in these two special situations, no one in the room knew it beside me and the boss who announced it. And if you watched into the faces of all these people with all their fears, expectations, surprises. So I think there are not many situations where you can have more mammoths in the room than when a peer becomes leader of his peers. This is a very, very interesting thing. And it was a lot of learnings inside, and you have to know what you do and how to overcome this situation, because they should in a way become followers. And at the end of the day,
what kind of rebels did you see? What kind of emotional responses did you see, which you would highlight as here are the mammoths lurking? What did you experience?
Very different. Some people were very surprised. Some were happy with that. You saw it in their faces. Some of them had some fears.
Okay.
It was a very a mixture of many, many emotions. And that is, the situation is very special because out of a second, for those people, you have power over them if you would use this power. And this makes it very, very special. If some of those people think that you are now the one who will enhance their abilities, will enhance their success, will support their success,
yeah,
their careers. Others do not quite know how, if you probably had a conflict in the past, what is there? Are there thoughts of revenge inside? Whatever, could be very childish things, but also very highly sophisticated things which are in there. And this situation is one of the biggest learnings you can have in a business career.
Yeah. How did you approach this? What were the, you know, the some of the tools you used, or just some of the tactics you used to overcome this?
I mean, you know in advance that you become the leader of your peers, and you have to be clear in what are the strategies and the operations you will do. But at the end of the day, it's only one thing which you really should do, that's building trust. And there's only one thing which really can build trust. Take your time and talk with the people. Listen to them, ask questions. How are you with this decision? What do you expect from me? Just talk to the people. Take your time and talk to the people. You have to build trust. Trust is the foundation of everything.
Yeah. I can very much relate to that. It also happened to me a couple times in my career, and it is a difficult situation, 100%. Is there any other situations which comes to mind where you definitely saw one of these big evolutionary mammoths, working
in their room? The thing with these mammoths is you have mammoths with a different extent. There are these big mammoths, which are obvious. You see them, you know them. They are there. For example, when there is a restructuring, whatever. This is a very clear thing. But probably which is more important for the long term, more relevant are these tiny little mammoths, which are all around there all the time. You have them in your business life. It can be a wrong word. It can be the right wording. It can be the wrong wording. It can be only a look to a person, which can trigger one of those mammoths. And this to be aware of that the mammoths are there and you can trigger them is, and you can do it with very tiny little things. This is probably one of the biggest developments a leader can make, to be aware of the tiny, because there could be so many, there can be so many, and you can trigger things with many little, probably you can trigger more things with many little mammoths than with one big mammoth. Because the one big mammoth is there, it's obvious, it's on the table, and you can handle it, and you can take it, you can find a solution for this mammoth. But if, for example, when I worked for a company in the leadership team, there came a new CEO from another country. He was quite a charming guy, and I liked, in a way, I liked his style, and I liked his kind of humor. It was this probably, you know, this British humor, kind of this humor. But what he did from the beginning on is that he he made jokes about the country where he was in now. Okay. For example, he said, Austria, dangerous. Because in Austria on Sunday the shops are closed, and so he came in after his first Sunday in Vienna and came to the office and said, my family and I had to starve a lot because there was no shop open to buy some food. And then about working times, about the way salaries work, about salary increases and all these things. And he continuously, and he couldn't stop making jokes about the country where he was a guest.
This is always very disrespectful, I have to say.
Yeah, disrespectful. And so by doing this continuously, one single thing was funny. But doing this continuously all over the time, he completely lost the whole followership.
Yeah.
He was, I think, isolated, yeah, alone. This is you cannot do this. For example, when a football player comes to a new team, he cannot make jokes about the team or the owner of his team is all the time. His players will not pass him a ball after a while. Yeah. So
that's disrespectful. And I think what you are referring to here is, and I can also share a similar example. I think it's a kind of a dominance bias. Very often leaders come in and think they are at the top of the org chart. They are now the leaders and they need to show that they are leaders and they need to show that they are strong. Yeah. And I have the power and all these things. And it is terrible because, as you rightly say, every once in a while, some of these things might be okay. But if you do that constantly and you constantly belittle the people and you constantly show off that you have the power and you can make this decision, that you can actually act what you want, how you want, that's terrible. I have a similar situation. I remember in one of my companies, we also got a general manager from another country. It wasn't really related to the other country, but what happened was on the first day, this person went into his general manager bureau, he made a phone call, and he made that phone call with door open, but had his shoes and his legs on the table. Can you imagine? And he talked very loud so that everyone was actually who walked by saw that the guy was sitting there. He had the feet on the table and everyone knew, okay, trouble is coming. And trouble came. And you know what? Even at the end, he was laid off. But these are these power plays which are so unnecessary and destroy so much.
The time for this kind of personality is gone. It's completely over. It is. I know imagine the other way around. I often heard this saying, walk the dog.
Yeah.
Walking through. Yes, you can do that. You can walk the dog. But I would rather transfer it to walk the question. There is a guy from the MIT, I can't remember his name. He wrote a book. Questions are the answers.
Yeah.
The leadership book. Hal Gregerson, I think is his name. And that is very, very, I've thought a lot. I met him once in Vienna and I had a lot of, it didn't get rid of me, this thought. Questions are the answer. And if you're a leader and you don't ask questions, what do you know about your team, about the culture, about the business, about the market? You know nothing. You sit in your ivory tower and you know nothing. And that is, I think, and people feel so much respected when you go into the offices of the people and ask, without any judging, just go in and ask them, what is your opinion about it? Just ask the question. You feel so much, they feel appreciated and this is something. And it takes, especially when you are a new leader in a team, in a group, if you come to a new company, ask these questions because people will feel more safe. They will feel more respected. Your onboarding is a lot easier. So this thing, questions are the answer.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? And just for the audience, we're not talking so much about solutions today. So this is just what kind of situations we will discuss in the upcoming mammoth encounters. We just want to give a bit of a headline of what we are facing as leaders. I have one other example which I think fits perfectly into this. At some point in my career, we had somebody who became a department lead and said over and over again how interested he is in people. Right. So that person finally at some point, we had the opportunity to have a meeting with that person. And then in that meeting, which was, I still remember, 1.5 hours, that person, who wanted officially to know so much about us, never asked one question about any of us. That person only talked for not 1.5 hours, but basically for 1 hour and even a little bit more than an hour about what that person achieved, did, could, even about the family, about everything, but not one question to the team. So you can imagine that person is not interested in the people. Now, what you then do with it and how you manage that situation, that's on a different, we talk about that on a different occasion, but these are the things we want to discuss in these mammoth encounters, because if somebody comes in and asks, Tony, how are you? Tell me about your family and what have you achieved in your career? What are you proud of? What did not work well? That's a person with true interest. That person, you interact in a complete different way than with somebody who 1 hour talked about him or herself and doesn't care about others. That has an impact on everything you do, on every presentation you give, on every time when you see that person on the hallway. It's very, very different situations.
And imagine the other way around, because I've seen leaders like this as well. They do, those who do the opposite. The first time they come, they are new, they come, new boss comes, and the first time he enters your office, and the first question he asks you is, why are the numbers not high enough? What's wrong with your numbers? Question like this, opening the door, even without knocking, just open the door and say, what's wrong with your numbers?
Yeah.
Imagine.
Great. That's fantastic. You know what's coming. Well,
yeah.
I want to say one thing here. I'm always in the mammoth in the room. I always brag about all my own mistakes. Because I don't want to. It would be completely, I would say, ridiculous to come across as somebody who never made these mistakes. I can tell you, a lot of the things we are talking today is because I made these mistakes. Was I one of them who maybe did these things? Who took over teams and then started with the numbers? I don't think I came across like in a way, somehow aggressive or whatever. I don't think I did that. I think I was always kind. I think people might disagree, but I think I was always kind. But I definitely was potentially one of these people who the first question was, how are you doing? Great. What about your numbers? And I learned over time that you're not winning your team with these questions. You need to be interested in the person. And the reason is also because when you know that what drives your person, what drives the person you're talking to, you adapt your dialogue to that. And that leads to better business results, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, when I took over a new team, I did the opposite, because I saw, this guy has very good numbers. And I went to his office and said, wow, your numbers are great. But it was the wrong person. So
great. So you didn't know the person. Good. Well, that's another one.
So
yeah.
I've mixed up the persons and the numbers. So this is also, so be prepared when you ask questions.
Yeah. No, I definitely, that's a big problem. I think this, I learned this over time, that just because you are promoted and now you are on top of the org chart has nothing to do with being the leader of the team in the sense of leadership, right?
Exactly.
Tony, I know you have so many other examples. Maybe let's pivot a little bit out of business. Is there anything which comes to mind from all your other things you're doing? Maybe sports or something which you could share where you saw one of the mammoths, you had to deal with a mammoth?
A couple of years ago, I trained a soccer team, 15-year-old guys, and it was a small town in Austria in the Alps. And I was lucky because I had 18, 19 guys which were very, very talented, very good soccer players. We played in a very high league, which is not typical for a small town. And so I said, okay, how can I bring the best out of this team? And decided, because I have very quick, fast players as well, to do this back four formation. Fathers of all these players were also soccer players in their younger years, and they cannot do that. Teams, it took them a year to learn that back four formation. And the guys came to the training as well, feeling quite unsure.
Not confident.
Does he do the right things? But I did it. I believed in that. And then the championship came after these 6-8 weeks preparation. And we lost some matches. We won some matches. But we played this chain, this back four chain. Sometimes we played it very good and it brought us the win of the match. Sometimes it didn't work so well. But what I have learned, that a team cannot be better than what you believe it can be. This is a core thing of everything. And you cannot imagine how much you transfer to a team what you believe about this team. I've seen that. I've also once I took over a field force, it was in my younger days, and I had this opinion, no, these are no salespersons. Look, this is not the team I want to have. And it didn't work. It didn't work. Probably. And having made this experience about this soccer team earlier, I probably would have handled this team completely different.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's your inner and, you know, an old friend.
Because you are transporting these feelings to the others, right? The belief or the not belief. Yeah.
Look, an old friend of mine, she is a psychologist, and she wrote a book about charisma. And for her, charisma is something you can teach and you can learn. And the fundament of charisma for her is that you have a house of values, a clear structure in yourself of values on which you believe. And when you have this as a leader, then it is too, you have one half of the race. It depends on the values. Sure.
The one question which comes to mind here is, and we don't need to go too much into the details here, but you know, there is a balance between being confident and being overconfident and maybe being in irrealistic. How do you find, how did you in that situation, just in this one situation, how did you find that balance to not, you know, to, because if you told your people you will win every match, they would have been disappointed, right? So you probably didn't tell them you will win every match. How did you transport that balance between confidence that they can do it, but not overconfident that people might get even arrogant or, hey, I'm the best or whatever. How did you play this in this group with your guys?
One part was very easy. I knew these teams for a couple of, and you saw where their skills, their strengths and their weaknesses are. So I could really, after I had this strategy for the matches in place, I put the right people to the right place, where they could bring out their strengths at the best. We did some matches in the preparation time. We did in the training time. We did some matches against pretty weak teams. Yeah. So that they first kind of we can do it. It works. And then again, it was a lot of single coaching, coaching the whole team, talking single about coaching. The strategy, and then single coaching. That is something. And especially there was I had a co-trainer. He did all the warm up front to the match. And I took every single player to me, walked around a little bit offside the team and gave him some. Now people are different. The other one is like a bull, and the other one is a little bit scared. And so you need to find the right words for each person and to give him the confidence and again, mentioning his special strategy and so on. This is all this worked very well. And when there was the first match, it was very funny because this team was from a big town, you know, they can look around for much more talents and so on, and was one of the favorites in the league. And we won. We played in their place and we won, which was really exceptional. Good. And the first thing I did after the match, give my congratulations to the team, was walk to these fathers who had their doubts and brought their doubts into their sons and said, at the end of the day, I have to say it. No, you do not know very much about soccer.
You love that moment. I can imagine you love that moment. No, I think the real lesson is obviously there is a soccer or football or soccer lesson, but there is a leadership lesson in there. And I think this is great. A leadership lesson about believing in what you can do, and still finding the balance, in order to make it happen.
There's another thing in sports where you can demonstrate trust, how important trust is. You know, in Taekwondo, you have these three rounds of 2 minutes. And then when it is equal, you have this golden kick. And so you as a trainer have to do the strategy for your fighter. When you have to exactly when he turns his nose a little bit left, give this kick from below. He has to fully trust and believe you, because there is only in this golden kick situation, there is only this one single chance, and he has to fully trust you. Yeah. And it's also, you have to do some work if it doesn't work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This is fantastic. This is exactly where in the future we wanna go forward, and we wanna, you know, talk with others and share this. These leadership situations where we can learn from leaders like you how to overcome difficult situations. And I do believe, I think what we unpacked today is two things, and we want to do, you know, just wrap it a little bit. What we can take away is, on the one hand, just because you are on top of maybe three things. One is when you have come into a leadership position just because you are on top of the org chart, that doesn't mean you're the leader. The next thing is, I think what we learned was, and what many leaders I think underestimate is invest the time to talk with your people individually. I think at the beginning when in our careers, we were very much business driven, and we only later found out that getting to know your people, spending time with them, investing in their own journey, understanding where they come from, what they want, that is not lost time for business. That is actually what makes you super quick afterwards, right? I think that is also what we learned. And then the third thing is, and I really like that, Tony, the big mammoth are the big mammoth everyone sees, right? They're restructuring, and there's a new manager coming, and everything will change. And there is all of it in there, right? There is fear. There is underconfidence. There is the people think they have no opportunities. Other thing that is a threat. All is there. But the more difficult things are the day-to-day things, right? The day-to-day small things which, if you don't spot them early enough, it might drag you down. Or if you get it right, it builds you up.
Yes. It can be like cancer, putting these metastases everywhere. If they are continuously it's like a poison you take. You know, the amount of poison in a one single shot does not kill you. You do not even feel it, like smoking.
Yeah.
But if you do it continuously, there is the cancer, and then you have the metastasis. And this is probably one of the biggest challenge for identifying these mammoths. It is an illusion to say for every mammoth there you have a solution. Yeah. You know, we all know these situations where you don't have a solution. This you have to accept it as well. If there is no solution,
yeah.
But it's better to know that there is no solution than to oversee it.
Yeah.
To oversee that there is the mammoth.
Overlook it, yes.
Because
And
we all know these paradox situations. When an airplane is with a terrorist on board, has 300 people on board with 10 kilogram or 10,000 kilogram of bomb material going straight to a town. You have to decide, do I shoot this airplane and save 10,000 lives, but kill these 300 or don't do it? This is a paradox situation, and the solution is always difficult. And also as a leader, you will get into this, especially when it comes to personal things between people. We should keep in mind, as a leader, you don't have a solution for everything. It simply does not exist.
I think in some of these situations, I think it's just also important to know what not to do. Even if there is no solution, sometimes you just knowing what not to do is already a lot, helps a lot. All right. Well, this is a lot, right? And again, this is the first episode to our audience. Now, this is what we want to do, in the future when we talk about mammoth encounters. Here we have shown, this first mammoth encounter was about opening the door, right? Giving you a glimpse of what these conversations will feel like. In the future, each encounter will dive into maybe one defining situation a leader faced, and we'll unpack together, spot the mammoth in the room, explore its impact, reflect on what might have been done differently. And most importantly, we want to share the wisdom leaders take away from those moments. And in following us, you will be able to learn from the greatest leaders in the world. And who are the greatest leaders? Well, not always the ones with the titles at the very top. No, the greatest leaders are you, the ones who live leadership every single day on the field, on the production line, in the project teams, in these unseen moments where decisions are made and trust is built. And those leaders are often invisible. But here we will make them visible. We make you visible, because these are the leaders we can truly learn from. And in sharing their encounters, we make their wisdom to collective wisdom and accessible to all of us. And the outcome, we all get better. All right. Let's wrap it up. I mean, this was it for today. One last super big thank you to our guest of today, Tony. It was a true pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for sharing some of your amazing experience, your knowledge and philosophy about leadership. Thank you.
It's a pleasure for me too, because reflecting on these things is always a pleasure.
Perfect. All right. If this episode resonated with you, please subscribe, rate, and share it with anyone interested in leadership. And don't forget, Mammoth Leadership Sciences is launching a new online leadership academy this fall. It's packed with insights, tools, and frameworks to help you become a more self-aware, adaptive leader. Keep an eye out. And lastly, if you're interested in more, you can order my book. It has the same title as this podcast, The Mammoth in the Room. It offers a practical roadmap for how great leaders and their teams embrace evolutionary truths for outstanding business results. And it does that in three sections: on people, on strategy, and on implementation. Until next time, lead wisely, think critically, and don't let ancient instincts hijack your modern leadership. I'm Nicholas Bocconi, and this is The Mammoth in the Room. Thank you for listening. If you enjoy this content, don't forget to subscribe. I'll see you on the next episode of The Mammoth in the Room.